Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we visit Scotland. Scotland is part of Great Britain and on the same island as England. There are over 700 islands that are part of this country. It is the place where bagpipes were first made, large sacks that fill with air and make haunting music made from the skin of sheep or goats. And the people here wear kilts, skirts woven of many different varieties of plaid cloth. Each variety of plaid indicates which clan they come from. The Highland Games are held here as well. In larger festivals, one can see over 10,000 bagpipers at one time. For further information about Scotland for Children, I suggest sciencekids.co.nz. Our first tale is about a prince, a maiden, and an evil washerwife. The story mentions bannocks and collops, which my listener may not have heard of. A bannock is a Scottish oat cake, and a collop is a rasher of bacon. Here is The Black Bull of Norroway. In Norroway, long time ago, there lived a certain lady, and she had three daughters. The oldest of them said to her mother, "Mother, bake me a bannock and roast me a collop, for I'm going away to seek my fortune." Her mother did so, and the daughter went away to an old witch washerwife and told her purpose. The old wife bade her stay that day and look out of her back door and see what she could see. She saw nothing the first day. The second day she did the same and saw nothing. On the third day she looked again and saw a coach and six coming along the road. She ran in and told the old wife what she saw. "Well," quoth the old woman, "yon's for you." So they took her into the coach and galloped off. The second daughter went next to her mother. "Mother, bake me a bannock and roast me a collop, for I'm going away to seek my fortune." Her mother did so, and away she went to the old wife as her sister had done. On the third day she looked out of the back door and saw a coach and four coming along the road. "Well," quoth the old woman, "yon's for you." So they took her in and off they went. The third daughter says to her mother, "Mother, bake me a bannock and roast me a collop, for I'm going away to seek my fortune." Her mother did so, and away she went to the old witch. She bade her look out of her back door and see what she could see. She did so, and when she came back, she said she saw nothing. The second day she did the same and saw nothing. The third day she looked again, and on coming back said to the old wife, she saw nothing but a great black bull coming careening along the road. "Well," quoth the old witch, "yon's for you." On hearing this, she was next to distracted with grief and terror, but she was lifted up and set on his back, and away they went. Aye, they traveled, and on they traveled, till the lady grew faint with hunger. "Eat out of my right ear," says the black bull, "and drink out of my left ear, and set by your leaving." So she did as he said, and was wonderfully refreshed. And long they rode and hard they rode till they came in sight of a very big and bonny castle. "Yonder we must be this night," quoth the bull, "for my elder brother lives yonder." And presently they were at the place. They lifted her off his back and took her in and sent him away to a park for the night. In the morning when they brought the bull home, they took the lady into a fine shining parlor and gave her a beautiful apple, telling her not to break it till she was in the greatest strait ever mortal was in the world, and that would bring her out of it. Again she was lifted on the bull's back, and after she had ridden far and farther than I can tell, they came in sight of a far bonnier castle, and far farther away than the last. Says the bull to her, "Yonder we must be this night, for my second brother lives yonder." And they were at the place directly. They lifted her down and took her in and sent the bull to the field for the night. In the morning they took the lady into a fine and rich room and gave her the finest pair she had ever seen, bidding her not to break it till she was in the greatest strait ever mortal could be in, and that would get her out of it. Again she was lifted and set on his back, and away they went, and long they rode, and hard they rode, till they came in sight of the far biggest castle, and far farthest off they had yet seen. "We must be yonder to-night," says the bull, "for my young brother lives yonder," and they were there directly. They lifted her down, took her in, and sent the bull to the field for the night. In the morning they took her into a room, the finest of all, and gave her a plum, telling her not to break it till she was in the greatest strait mortal could be in, and that would get her out of it. Presently they brought home the bull, set the lady on his back, and away they went. And aye they rode, and on they rode, till they came to a dark and ugsome glen, where they stopped, and the lady lighted down. Says the bull to her, "Here you must stay till I go and fight the old one. You must seat yourself on that stone, and move neither hand nor foot till I come back, else I'll never find you again. And if everything round about you turns blue, I have beaten the old one, but should all things turn red, he'll have conquered me." She set herself down on the stone, and by all round her turned blue. Overcome with joy, she lifted one of her feet and crossed it over the other. So glad was she that her companion was victorious. The bull returned and sought for her, but never could find her. Long she sat, and aye, she wept till she wearied. At last she rose and went away, she didn't know where. On she wandered till she came to a great hill of glass that she tried all she could to climb, but wasn't able. Round the bottom of the hill she went, sobbing and seeking a passage over, till at last she came to a smith's house, and the smith promised if she would serve him 7 years, he would make her iron shoes, wherewith she could climb over the glassy hill. At 7 years' end she got her own iron shoes, climbed the glassy hill, and chanced to come to the same old washerwife's habitation that she had left. There she was told of a gallant young knight that had given in some clothes, covered all over with blood, to wash, and whoever washed them was to be his wife. The gallant young knight was indeed the great bull of Norroway, who had been transformed by the witchy washerwoman, but now had returned to his true form. The old wife had washed till she was tired, and then she set her daughter at it, and both washed, and they washed, and they washed, and they washed, in hopes of getting the young knight, but for all they could do they couldn't bring out a stain. At length they set the stranger damsel to work, and whenever she began, the stains came out pure and clean, and the old wife made the knight believe it was her daughter had washed his clothes. So the knight and the eldest daughter were to be married, and the stranger damsel was distracted at the thought of it, for she was deeply in love with him. So she bethought her of her apple, and breaking it, found it filled with gold and precious jewelry, the richest she had ever seen. "All these," she said to the eldest daughter, "I will give you, on condition that you put off your marriage for one day, and allow me to go into his room alone at night." The lady consented, but meanwhile the old wife had prepared a sleeping drink, and given it to the knight, who drank it, and never wakened till next morning. The livelong night the damsel sobbed and sang, "7 long years I served for thee, the glassy hill I clomb for thee, thy bloody clothes I wrang for thee, and wilt thou not waken and turn to me?" Next day she knew not what to do for grief. Then she broke the pear, and found it filled with jewelry far richer than the contents of the apple. With these jewels she bargained for permission to be a second night in the young knight's chamber, but the old wife gave him another sleeping drink, and again he slept till morning. All night she kept sighing and singing as before, "7 long years I served for thee, the glassy hill I clomb for thee, thy bloody clothes I wrang for thee, and wilt thou not waken and turn to me?" Still he slept, and she nearly lost hope altogether. But that day, when he was out hunting, Somebody asked him what noise and moaning was that they heard all last night in his bedchamber. He said, "I have heard no noise." But they assured him there was, and he resolved to keep waking that night to try what he could hear. That being the third night, and the damsel being between hope and despair, she broke her plum, and it held far the richest jewelry of the three. She bargained as before, and the old wife, as before, took in the sleeping drink to the young knight's chamber. But he told her he couldn't drink it that night without sweetening. And when she went away for some honey to sweeten it with, he poured out the drink, and so made the old wife think he had drunk it. They all went to bed again, and the damsel began as before, singing, "Seven long years I served for thee, the glassy hill I clomb for thee, thy bloody clothes I wrang for thee, and wilt thou not waken and turn to me?" He heard, and he turned to her, and she told him all that had befallen her, and he told her all that had happened to him. And he caused the old washerwife and her daughter to be burnt, and they were married, and he and she are living happy to this day, for aught I know. The next story is about seals, mermaids, and love that is not so everlasting. Here is The Mermaid Wife. A story is told of an inhabitant of Unst who, in walking on the sandy margin of a cove, saw a number of mermen and mermaids dancing by moonlight and several seal skins strewed beside them on the ground. At his approach, they immediately fled to secure their garbs, and taking upon themselves the form of seals, plunged immediately into the sea. But as the Shetlander perceived that one skin lay close to his feet, he snatched it up, bore it swiftly away, and placed it in concealment. On returning to the shore, he met the fairest damsel that was ever gazed upon by mortal eyes, lamenting the robbery by which she had become an exile from her submarine friends and a tenant of the upper world. Vainly she implored the restitution of her property, but the man had drunk deeply of love and was inexorable, but he offered her protection beneath his roof as his betrothed spouse. The merlady, perceiving that she must become an inhabitant of the earth, found that she could not do better than accept the offer. This strange attachment subsisted for many years, and the couple had several children. The Shetlander's love for his merwife was unbounded, but his affection was coldly returned. The lady would often steal alone to the desert strand, and on a signal being given, a large seal would make his appearance, with whom she would hold, in an unknown tongue, an anxious conference. Years had thus glided away when it happened that one of the children, in the course of his play, found concealed beneath a stack of corn a seal skin, and delighted with the prize, he ran with it to his mother. Her eyes glistened with rapture. She gazed upon it as her own, as the means by which she could pass through the ocean that led to her native home. She burst forth into an ecstasy of joy, which was only moderated when she beheld her children, whom she was now about to leave. And after hastily embracing them, she fled with all speed towards the seaside. The husband immediately returned, learned the discovery that had taken place, ran to overtake his wife, but only arrived in time to see her transformation of shape completed, to see her in the form of a seal, bound from the ledge of a rock into the sea. The large animal of the same kind, with whom she had held a secret converse, soon appeared, and evidently congratulated her in the most tender manner on her escape. But before she dived to unknown depths, she cast a parting glance at the wretched Shetlander, whose despairing looks excited in her breast a few transient feelings of commiseration. "Farewell," said she to him, "and may all good attend you. I loved you very well when I resided upon earth, but my home has always been the sea." And she dove under the waves, never to be seen by man ever again. Scotland has its own version of Cinderella, quite different from many of the others that I've told. You'll hear the word rashes, which is Scottish for rushes or reeds. Simple, short, and to the point, here is Rashan Cody. Once a long time ago, there was a gentleman had two lassies. The oldest was ugly and ill-natured, but the youngest was a bonny lassie and good. But the ugly one was the favorite with her father and mother, so they ill-used the youngest in every way, and they sent her into the woods to herd cattle, and all the food she got was a little porridge and whey. Well, amongst the cattle was a red calf, and one day it said to the lassie, "Gee that porridge and whey to the doggie and come with me." So the lassie followed the calf through the wood, and they came to a bonny hoosie, where there was a nice dinner ready for them, and after they had feasted on everything nice, they went back to the herding. Every day the calf took the lassie away and feasted her on dainties, and every day she grew bonnier. This disappointed the father and mother and the ugly sister. They expected that the rough usage she was getting would take away her beauty, and they watched and watched until they saw the calf take away the lassie to the feast. So they resolved to kill the calf, and not only that, but the lassie was to be compelled to kill him with an axe. Her ugly sister was to hold his head, and the lassie who loved him had to give the blow and kill him. She could do nothing but grieve, but the calf told her not to grieve, but to do as he bade her, and his plan was that instead of coming down on his head, she was to come down on the lassie's head who was holding him, and then she was to jump on his back, and they would run off. Well, the day came for the calf to be killed, and everything was ready, the ugly lassie holding his head, and the bonny lassie armed with the axe. So she raised the axe and came down on the ugly sister's head, and in the confusion that took place, she got on the calf's back, and they ran away. And they ran, and better nor ran, till they came to a meadow where grew a great lot of rashes. And as the lassie had not on many clothes, they picked rashes and made a coat for her. And they set off again and traveled, till they came to the king's house. They went in and asked if they wanted a servant. The mistress said she wanted a kitchen lassie and asked the girl's name. The calf, worried that her evil family would find her, declared her name was Rashan Cody, after the clothes she wore. So the mistress said she would take Rashan Cody. Rashan Cody said she would stay if they kept the calf too. They were willing to do that. So the lassie and the calf stayed in the king's house, and everybody was well pleased with her. And when Yule came, they said she was to stop at home and make the dinner while all the rest went to the kirk. After they were away, the calf asked if she would like to go. She said she would, but she had no clothes and she could not leave the dinner. The calf said he would give her clothes and make the dinner too. He went out and came back with a grand dress, all silk and satin, and such a nice pair of slippers. So she went to the kirk, and nobody knew it was Rashan Cody. They wondered who the bonny lady could be, and as soon as the young prince saw her, he fell in love with her and resolved he would find out who she was before she got home. But Rashan Cody left before the rest so that she might get home in time to take off her dress and look after the dinner. When the prince saw her leaving, he made for the door to stop her, but she jumped past him and in the hurry lost one of her shoes. The prince kept the shoe, and Rashan Cody got home all right, and the folk said the dinner was very nice. Now the prince was resolved to find out who the bonny lady was, and he sent a servant through all the land with the shoes. Every lady was to try it on, and the prince promised to marry the one it would fit. That servant went to a great many houses, but could not find a lady that the shoe would go on. It was so little and neat. At last he came to a henwife's house, and her daughter had little feet. At first the shoe would not go on, but she cut the tips of her toes and slipped her foot in, and the shoe went on. Now the prince was very angry. He knew it was not the lady that he wanted, but because he had promised to marry whoever the shoe fitted, he had to keep his promise. The marriage day came, and as they were all riding to the kirk, a little bird flew through the air, and it sang,
"Clipped feet and Baratis is on the saddle set, but bonny feet and braw feet sits in the kitchen nook."
"What's that, you say?" said the prince. "Oh," says the henwife, "would you mind what a field bird says?" But the prince said, "Sing that again, bonny birdie." So the bird sings,
"Clipped feet and Baratis is on the saddle set, but Bonny Feet and Braw Feet sits in the kitchen nook.
The prince turned his horse and rode home and went straight to his father's kitchen. And there sat Rashen Coatie. He knew her at once. She was so bonny, and when she tried on the shoe, it fitted her. And so the prince married Rashen Coatie, and they lived happy and built a house for the red calf who had been so kind to her. And for all I know, they are happy there still to this day. This last story has all kinds of magical creatures, witches, dwarves, fairies, and mermen. It's called The Fishermen of Shetland. There was a snug little cove in one of the Shetland Islands. At the head of the cove stood a fishing hamlet. In these huts lived the fisher folk, ruled by one man, the chief, who was the father of two beautiful daughters. Now, these fishermen for some years had been very lucky, for a fairy queen and her fairies had settled there, and she had given her power over to a merman, who was the chief of a large family of mermaids. The fairy queen had made the merman a belt of seaweed, which he always wore round his body. The merman used to turn the water red, green, and white at noon each day, so that the fishermen knew that if they cast their nets into the colored waters, they would make good hauls. Amongst these fishermen were two brave brothers who courted the chief's daughters, but the old man would not let them get married until they became rich men. Whenever the fishermen went off in the boats, the merman was used to sit on a rock and watch them fishing. Close by the hamlet was a great wood in which lived a wicked old witch and a dwarf. Now this witch wished to get possession of the merman's belt and so gain the fairy's power. Telling her scheme to the dwarf, she said to him,
"Now you must trap the merman when he is sitting on the rocks watching the fishing fleet, but I must change you into a bee when you must drink of the juice in this magic basin, then fly off and alight on the merman's head when he will fall asleep."
So the dwarf agreed, and it happened as she had said, and the merman fell asleep, and the dwarf stole the belt and brought it to the witch.
"Now you must wear the belt," said the witch to the dwarf, "and you will have the power, and the fairy will lose her power."
They then moved the sleeping merman to the forest and laid him before the hut, when the witch got a copper vessel, saying,
"We must bury him in this."
Then she got the magic pot and told the dwarf to take a ladleful of the fluid in the pot and pour it over the merman, which he did. And immediately the merman turned into smoke that settled in the copper vessel. Then they sealed the copper vessel tightly.
"Now take the vessel and heave it into the sea miles from the land," said the witch,
and the dwarf did as he was bid.
"Now we'll starve those old fishermen out this winter," said the witch,
and it happened as she had said. They could catch nothing. In the spring, Queen Fairy came to one of the brave young fishermen who was courting one of the chief's daughters and said, "You must venture for the sake of your love, for the lives of the fishermen, or you will all starve, but I will be with you. Will you run the risk?"
"I will," said the brave fisherman.
"Well, the dwarf has got my belt. He stole it from the merman, and so I have lost power over the world for 12 months and a day. But if you get back the belt, I can kill the witch. If not, you will all starve and catch no fish." So the bold fisherman agreed to try. "Now I must transform you into a bear, and you'll have to watch the witch and the dwarf and take your chance of getting the belt. And you must watch where he hides his treasure, for he is using the belt as a means to get gold, which he hides in a cave." And so the sailor was turned into a bear, and he went to the wood and watched the dwarf and saw that he hid his treasure in a cave in some crags. The bear had been given the power of making himself invisible by the fairy. One night, the bear felt like going to see his sweetheart, one of the chieftain's daughters, so he went and knocked on the door. The girl opened the door and shrieked when she saw the bear. "Oh, let him in," said her old mother. So the bear came in and asked for shelter from the storm, for he could speak.
"I won't do you any harm," he said. "Let me sleep by the fire."
He came again the next night, and they gave him some gruel
and played with him, for he was just like a dog. So he came every night until the springtime, when one morning as he was going away, he said,
"You mustn't expect me any more. Spring has come and the snows have melted. I can't come again till the summer's over."
So he returned to the wood and watched the dwarf, but he could never catch him without his belt, until one day he saw him fishing for salmon without the belt, and at the same time his sweetheart and her sister came by picking flowers. So the bear went up to the dwarf, and the dwarf, when he saw him coming, said,
"Oh, good bear, let me go. These two girls will be more dainty morsel for you."
But the bear smote him with his paw and killed him, and immediately the bear was turned into his former self, and the girls ran up and kissed him. Then he took the two girls to the dwarf's cave and gave each of them a bag of treasure, keeping one for himself. And taking the belt, he put it on, and they all walked back to the hamlet. When he told the fishermen that their troubles would soon be over, but that he must kill the witch first. Then he turned the bell 3 times and said, "I wish for the queen fairy." And she came and was delighted and said, "Now you must come and slay the witch." And she handed him a bow and arrow. So he went off to the wood and found the witch in her hut and dragged her out, and she begged for mercy. "Oh no, you have done too much mischief," he said, and he shot her. The 12 months were up on that day, and the fairy said to the fisherman, "Take your chief and your brother and put out to sea a half mile, where you'll see a red spot bright as the sun on the water. Cast in your net on the seaside of the spot and pull it to the shore." They did as the queen commanded, and when they pulled the net on the shore, they found the copper vessel. "Now open it," said the queen to the fisherman with the belt, "but cover your belt with your coat first." And so he did, and when he opened the copper, a ball of smoke rose into the air, and suddenly the merman stood before them and said, "The first 4 months that I was in prison, I swore I'd make the man as rich as a king, the man who released me, but there was no release, no release, no release. The second 4 months that I was in prison, I swore I'd make the water run red. There was no release, no release, no release. The last 4 months that I was in prison, I swore in my wrath I'd take my deliverer's life, whoever he might be." Whereupon, the fisherman opened his coat and showed him the belt. Then the merman immediately cooled down and said, "Oh, that's how I came into this trouble." Then the queen told the fisherman to take the girdle off and put it back on the merman, and he did so. And after that, the hamlet was joyful again, for the fishermen began to catch plenty of fish, for the merman showed them where to cast their nets by coloring the water, as of old. And the two brothers, well, they married the chief's 2 beautiful daughters, and they lived happily ever afterwards. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to the Arabian Peninsula to hear stories about magic lamps, genies, and princes who ride camels across vast deserts. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading.